another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show presented by RotoCurve. It is March 27, 2019 for us West Coasters, March 28th for you listening on the East Coast. I am the host of this great program, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85 on the social media. I am going to be joined here by Johnny tonight, the guru of all things legal betting. Guy is the absolute truth when it comes to betting. You know, he started doing the player props now. He came to me for some props, and now he's starting to crush those as well. So he made some big money this weekend. So we'll be talking to him when he calls in about that. We just got a couple of NIT slates out of the way. Fun slate today. Lipscomb beating NC State. Hit my little two-game parlay with the DePaul money line and the Lipscomb plus five. Let's go, baby. Let's go. We got Sweet 16 action tomorrow. We're going to talk about those four games. Also, an announcement, if you guys haven't already heard, but tomorrow night's show, we will have the famous Uncle Dunkel, an elite, one of the top cappers in the game. Does college basketball, pro sports. He even caps tennis. The guy is an absolute mad. He's a mad lad. He's a fucking mad lad, guys. Sorry, it required me to cuss. He's an absolute mad lad. So he's going to join us tomorrow, share his insight on the Sweet 16 and beyond, and kind of, you know, give us his thoughts. He hasn't played DFS this year. Thankfully, dude was an absolute monster when he did, I got to tell you. So we're looking forward to that. If you want to call in, if you happen to be listening, I know it's pretty late. It's a work day for those of you who work a normal job. What is that, right? 929-477-1107. I got my man Johnny on the line. I feel like my audio is not working. How you doing, Johnny?
What's going on, man?
Is my audio working?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I just, I don't know. People been complaining about my audio lately. You know, we're going to take it to the next level next season, get us some professional equipment, a new podcast platform, because Blog Talk can't hold us no more. Johnny. Tell me about the weekend you just had, man. You won an incredible amount of money, right?
$26,000, Walker, over a
day. This dude
and a
won $26,000, people. $26,000. You want to question me about Johnny being the betting goat? $26,000, brother. How'd you do it, man? You hit a parlay, right?
Well, I had a $1,000 parlay on the NIT, Walker. I money line Wichita against Clemson. They were like plus 250, and that I believe was the same day. Hold on, I'm trying to pull up that day because that's where I got most of my money. Hold on, let me take a look at the NIT, and then I can tell you. But Wichita, I didn't take the points. I trusted Greg Marshall and. That guy's still a very good coach, so let me go ahead.
You money-lined Wichita when they were dogs, right?
Against Clemson. It was on
They were dogs.
Sunday.
You money-lined them?
Yep, so Walter, this is the parlay. Wichita plus 250. Xavier plus 6 against Texas, which won the overtime. And I had our Harvard boys plus 6 against NC State. So I had a plus 250 and a minus 110 and a minus 110, and then I wound up straight betting TCU later in the day. So I went 4-0 in the NIT that day. But, yeah, so I had a plus 250, a minus 10, and a minus 110, and I had 1,000 on it, and it paid back 10,985 profit.
This dude bets $1,000 on a NIT parlay and gets $11,000 back. Then he hits the rest of his bets and some player props. I helped him out with that, you know. And $26,000, man. That's phenomenal.
No,
some people make that in a year, which nothing wrong with that. But that is an incredible amount of money to win in one weekend.
Well, Walter, and then because I told you with parlays, that gives you ammo to straight bet. Then I did two things, and I basically wheeled it. I had $5,000 on Houston against Ohio State laying 5.5 because I knew what was going to happen when Ohio State played them. But what I also did
man.
To back that up,
Ballsy. Yeah.
But what I did to back that up, Walter, I also put a $600 parlay, laying the 5.5 with Houston, and laid the 4.5 with Oregon against Irvine, because I knew Irvine wasn't going to win two games. None of the big teams won. None of the mid-major Cinderellas won two games this year in the tournament, which is very bizarre. But yeah, so I kind of just wheeled a bunch of stuff like that, and then prior to that, my best play of the second round, and I told everyone that would listen, and I told you, I will lay points between 2 and 6. And so this was right around the number where I knew I was going to lay it. I basically scaled the Michigan-Florida game in games multiple times. And I basically had like 6 different bets on Michigan because it was close at first, thankfully. And all 6 bets I had on Michigan cashed.
Damn, you're hot right now, bro.
Well, I mean, I knew Florida wasn't going to be able to score on them. Florida sucks. That's a bad basketball team. So,
hey, man, they got some good pieces though. They got some good pieces
against
Michigan, that stuff.
They beat Nevada because Musselman had 1 foot in the door at UCLA. And I feel bad for Rob on that because I know what he had, and he didn't have.
I mean, Florida got a lot better as the year. Like, I don't feel like people think they're a scrub team, but that Key Johnson kid is going to be an NBA player eventually, you know, in another year or two.
I mean, I wouldn't say scrub. I would just say that this wasn't one of their better teams.
Nah, for sure. My only regret tonight, man, was I didn't lay down another one on the Lipscomb game because I was pretty confident they were gonna either win or cover. That was the only thing I wish I would have done differently. On top of the parlay.
No, but what you did was great though, because of this. The way you were able to do that, and Walter, that's how I make most of my living. What an example of what you just saw. You will never see me lay 6 to 8 to 9, and I'll tell you why. Because I know that I could find either a dog or a -140 or less and get plus money on a parlay. I mean, yeah, you could have took the +180 on Lipscomb, and I tried to, but the live bet changed. But at the end of the day, whenever you're getting plus money on anything, you take it and you run with it. But you'll never see me take anything worse than even money because I don't need to.
So I want to call this out because this was a mess. Johnny was very impressive tonight. You know, he's been telling me the last couple of days that if I want to do some bets through him because, you know, he's in Vegas, I could do that. I wanted to bet last night, but I didn't get a chance to because I was very comfortable in Marshall. And of course they won. So today I was very confident in Lipscomb +5, and I knew DePaul would win the game. Now I came to him because I don't do a lot of betting quite yet. I'm still kind of getting into it. And I told him, I said, well, what about DePaul -8? And he said, no, that's too high. Just money line them. And then if you're comfortable with the Lipscomb, then pair them together for a parlay. So we did a little combination there, and it worked out just fine. Of course, Lipscomb ended up winning the game, which was fantastic, but, very sharp, very smart. And you're right. This time of year, it's hard for teams to cover to beat other teams by that much points, right?
The thing that you need to be happy about is not even the Lipscomb, because that was a great call and it helped me out too. But the fact that DePaul won and did not cover that's why you eat the juice though, because I mean, as soon as I seen the line, I didn't know Gage was in or out. I didn't really look into it like that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I mean, I had an idea they would probably win, especially when I seen how close it was. Well, the thing is, I kind of knew you were okay when they were down 2.5 and Vegas had a second half minus 6. It basically meant they thought you were going to win by 4, and they actually covered the second half line. But the point is, though, whenever you like a favorite, like, I'm pretty much telling you I'm going to be money line and Duke because I know the way that shit works, Walter, where Duke had their scare. They're not dealing with anybody who's 7'6". They're not dealing with a familiarity of Dawkins and his kid. And they're dealing with a team that's beating them without Zion at home, and here's the problem. I know how much you like Blackshear, and I like the guy. I respect the guy even. Zion's a different animal.
Yeah, I mean, Duke's definitely – I definitely feel like Duke's going to win that one. But
no, I mean I'm not
laying – But I love that.
I mean,
I'm not, I just want to say that again. Johnny's personal rule is if it's 6 or higher on the favorite, he just takes the money line, which we know a straight bet of just the money line for a big favorite. Not going to pay out a whole lot, right? But then he puts it with another one that he can get paid out on or parlay, and then he gets paid the big bucks. So that's how he
well,
does it, guys. Masterful.
Yeah.
Fucking genius, actually.
No,
really
well,
smart, man. Because when you told
no,
the money line to Paul, I was like, what? And then you're like, no, let's do it like this. And then it made sense to me.
Yeah, because it's more – because, Walter, I'll tell you the worst feeling in the world gambling. And because I pick winners at a high percentage – there's nothing. It's like being uppercut in the nuts, okay? When your team wins and they don't cover, there's not a worse feeling than that. And so, and it took me a while to figure out what I'm doing. I mean, it took me pretty much, I'll be honest, it took me years. Because I'm a pretty stubborn guy, and I used to play by the book's rules. I just did because I was like, you know what, if I'm as good as I say I am, it shouldn't matter. But here's the problem, and this is where it finally occurred to me. You know what, the books are going to have a lot of people play by their own rules, and they're going to get their money from those people. So then it dawned on me that if I'm good enough to find a dog or a minus 150 or lower and get plus money on 2, then I should keep doing this all day long and all season long and get them. So, and the thing is, and we'll get into my plays for the games Thursday and basically, we'll hold off on Friday because you get me on there with Dunkel, and that will be your most listened show ever. Especially because, GS, you like that idea.
No, I'm hyped, man. I'm ready from the very because you know because how many times have I told you like, oh, I know this team's gonna win, or I know I'm feel comfortable
well,
at the stat line, but I don't really bet. And then I watch you win all this money, and now you got me pretty hyped because now I'm gonna start betting more because
well,
I feel like I can leverage my DFS knowledge to win bets, and especially
I
these player props.
Want-
Dude, man.
Yeah, no.
I'm
dude, player
super
props,
excited now.
Player props is like DFS, dude. That's the same shit. But I
yeah.
do want to just throw out there, I originally liked Florida State with the points, and I was going to give that out, but now I have a problem. I didn't realize that man's father died, and he's the second leading scorer and not going to even be playing in the game. So,
well, it was Kofor.
Yeah,
it was Phil
Kofor,
right?
Oh, it was Kofor. I thought it was Kofor.
Yeah. Nah.
So here's
man
the thing.
Man released a video saying that he watched Phil Kofor's dad, his intensity, and he got real hyped up about it. So Florida State's
playing.
So Kofor's
well,
out for the tournament. He hasn't played yet. That's why Kevin
here's the thing. I didn't realize that was going on. So now yeah. I'm completely off the game now because I don't play into that stuff. I mean, yeah, you could look at it like, well, they're playing with emotion because of that. But the thing is, I'm skipping that game now because of that. I'm just not going to buy into all that bullshit. And I just want to reiterate, I'm expecting Gonzaga to win. Whether they cover 7 or not, I have no idea.
7 seems like a lot. Let's get into the games, and then we'll talk some more stuff here about betting. So I do want to jump into that. Florida State versus Gonzaga. KenPom has it 79-72 in favor of Gonzaga. They're 71st in tempo. Florida State 128. By far the fastest-paced game of the Thursday slate. We're looking at some pretty slow games overall, Johnny. So from a DFS perspective, I really want to attack FSU Gonzaga. I know that a lot of people are going to be rostering Terrence Mann, especially on Florida State. I'm a little late to the Mann party because I've had difficulties all year with Terrence Mann and Trent Forrest and getting them right. But the way that Terrence Mann is playing right now, I watched all of his game against Vermont. I watched all of his game against Murray. The dude is on a whole nother level. And I realize that Murray State and Vermont are not Gonzaga. Gonzaga is a completely different animal and a much better team, and they have the defensive prowess to stop them. But, again, this is tournament time, and they're going to score a lot of points. And this Florida State team already beat Gonzaga last year with a lot of the same players. They beat them in the Sweet 16, the very exact situation as last year, Johnny. I also think Gonzaga is going to win, but I think 7 points is way too much. This could be a potential overtime game. This could be a game where it's more a buzzer beater. Florida State, I do not think Florida State loses by more than 7. I do not see that. So Florida State with the points seems like a pretty strong bet to me. Looking at the prices, Terrence Mann is 5.6K on DraftKings. I do not care how good Gonzaga's defense is, and trust me, I've seen as many Gonzaga games as anyone on the West Coast. Terrence Mann is going in my lineups. There's just no way around it. If he gives me if he doesn't hit value, I can't feel bad about it. I got hit by variance because that's too cheap for him. My boy Mifiondo Cabangeli did me very well last weekend. He had 37 and then 40 against Murray in just 20. So 23 minutes, Johnny. The dude played 23 minutes. He shot 10 for 12, hit 2 of his threes, 7 boards, 3 blocks of steal, and 22 actual points for 40 fantasy points. Why he doesn't play more, I don't know. But Cabangeli at 5'9", his price actually went down $200 on DraftKings. So I will also be playing Cabangeli. The people have asked me, am I concerned that Chris Cumaji might play more minutes? Is there a chance that Cumaji and Cabangeli see the floor together? With the way Hamilton runs, it's probably not likely, but the fact that Gonzaga has so much height, it would make a whole lot of sense. And I'm also not, you know, somebody on Twitter said, well, you're just a DFS player, you know, you don't know better than Hamilton. I'm not saying I do, but if you look at the way they play with Cabangeli on the floor, they're a hell of a lot better team than when he's off the floor, and nobody can argue that. I can go, you know, you want me to go find the plus minus and all that other shit, I will, but just watch the game and tell me that they're not better with Cabangeli on the floor. If Cabangeli plays 30-plus minutes, they're going to be in it because the dude is putting up some serious stat lines. He's going to be a lottery pick in a year or two. He's pretty raw right now, but he's really good. Now, to counteract Rui, counteract Brandon Clark, Killy when he's out there, which I know he's more of a, you know, he's the guy that Cabangeli would guard because he's a little taller, but he shoots threes. But they're going to need Cumaji down there kind of, you know, muscling up with Clark and let Cabangeli's athleticism deal with Rui. Like, that's the absolute nut play. Now, they're probably going to have Raekwon Gray out there guarding, you know, I don't know if he's going to guard Rui or if he's going to guard Norvell. We'll have to see. But FSU definitely has the bodies. I guess the only concern I would be, the same concern I've had with FSU all year, is they're going to do hockey-like substitutions. So they're going to roll through their guys, and they're going to try to get Gonzaga tired, and that is smart. But I would love to see Cab and Cumaji on the floor together and see what that looks like. But, yeah, Cabangeli, I'm all in on him. I'm all in on Terrence Mann. If they're going to win this game, it's going to be because of them. And I'm interested to see how Gonzaga is going to you know, guard Cabangeli because when he's on the floor, his usage is incredible. 28% shot rate, 28% usage rate, 20% defensive rebounding rate, 12% offensive rebounding rate, and an almost a 9% block rate. He's also drawing 7 fouls per 40 when he's on the floor, 77% free throw shooter. And the threes that he hit on the season, he's only a 38% three-point shooter. But for a dude at 6'10", 250, he'll take 38%. You know what I'm saying? So I'm pretty, you know, goo-goo for this guy. Now, Raekwon Gray at 3'8 is somebody who, you know, we got cute the other day and used Devin Vessel, who actually had 9 points in 9 minutes, but he just didn't get more than 9 minutes. Raekwon Gray played 24 minutes and had 26 fantasy points. You want to take the starter there. And what this is turning into for us is a mini Florida State stack, which, you know, maybe against Gonzaga isn't the greatest thing in the world, but I'm looking at the Oregon-Virginia game, I'm looking at Texas Tech-Michigan, and I'm not seeing a lot of fantasy intrigue there. So I'm going to want a lot of this game, and it just makes too much sense not to. You know, Vassell got more minutes. minutes, he would be a great play too there at 3-7. Raekwon Gray at 3-8. Kumanji at 4-3 is intriguing. Terrence Mann at 5-6 and Kevin Gilley at 5-9. Those are the four Florida State guys I'm looking at. I'm not going to play them all together, but I'm certainly going to have two or three in most lineups. For Gonzaga, we got to see, you know, Rui Hachimura struggled. Brandon Clark had 64 fantasy points. He had 5 blocks, 2 steals, 36 actual points. Now, I wouldn't expect him to score over 20 actual points again. That was kind of an outlier. You know, you look at his log, 12, 16, 15, 15, 11. He's not really the scorer. That's Norville and Hachimura's job. Clark is the peripheral guy. Getting block, you know, he's one of the best shot blockers in the country. You know, he gets steals, gets rebounds. He's a very safe peripheral play. So at 9-5, it's a higher price to pay. But I'm done fading Brandon Clark because every time we do, he goes off, and he's got a very safe floor. So expect a bounce back from Rui Hachimura at 8-5. You know, he had 10 fantasy points last game, Johnny. He shot 2-for-6. He just was clearly off. I would expect Gonzaga to want to feature him early and often and get him going. The first few possessions, I'm almost certain you're going to see Rui jump shots and post up because they need their guy going in order for them to win. Norville is fine. He's always, you know, an upside play. He's 7-2. He's just kind of okay for me. I do worry about the Florida State guards kind of handcuffing him a bit. And then I do think, Johnny, this has the potential to be a Josh Perkins game. We haven't really been hearing from him lately. He's just kind of quietly putting up his 20 fantasy points and not really doing a whole lot else. They're going to need him to make shots, you know, just to do that. Florida State D is so solid, they're going to need Perkins to produce. So I could for sure see this being a Josh Perkins 30 spot where, you know, he puts up 18 actual points in his 5-6 dimes and you know, has a nice stat line. Tilly's there at 4-9 and Corey Kispert at 4-3. Those are the two secondary pieces for Gonzaga that you can look at. But, yeah, for me, I'm looking heavily at Brandon Clark because of the fact that everyone on Florida State is so cheap and maybe even Hachimura. I want the main dogs of this game, and then I'll look elsewhere for some of my values, you know, like that Diakite from Virginia. But now that you're not betting this game, if you're playing DFS, are you still attacking it from a DFS standpoint, or are you worried about that as well?
No, absolutely, because of this. I know Hachimura is going to bounce back. There's no way around that, because if he doesn't, they probably lose. I also looked at his player prop, which is 19.5 points. The thing is, you have to assume that he gets 20 for one reason. You're looking at what the total is. You know it's the highest total on the slate. So based on that, because here's the thing. We also know Brandon Clark is probably going to be the higher own than Rui because of because people like to ride a good game. I highly doubt Clark does that against Florida State. I think they're going to need Rui to kind of balance it out. And Norwell and Perkins, I mean, there's going to be a couple of Gonzaga guys that have to go off for them to win. I mean, if I had to guess, I would say Rui goes off, and I would say Norwell goes off. That's just kind of my take on who I think is going to do well for Gonzaga. And on Florida State, I like Captain Jelly. I definitely like Terrence Mann. And constructing a roster, I would kind of build around those four.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty close to you. I'm not quite as high on Norvell just because he's more of a GPP guy to me. But for like the Survivor that's going on tomorrow, Clark is definitely, somebody with a safe floor. Rui, that player prop, It's a little high for me to actually confidently bet. I don't know where your head's at with it. I mean, they definitely need him to score that much. I would be worried that he would hit like 16, 18, maybe the 19. Because he's hit 20 once in the last four games. The last five games, I should say.
I mean, if you're playing the percentages, then you're taking the under. I just don't know because – here's the thing, Walter. If we were talking about Rui who went off against frickin' Baylor like Clark did, then me and you are having a 100% different conversation. Then me and you are talking about Brandon Clark's prop. But the thing is, I just don't see a guy who's that skilled at back-to-back bad games. And that's kind of where my head's at. That's pretty much why.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not going to have a bad game. I don't. I just wonder how many points he's actually going to score. You know, close to that. But he can definitely do it. It's just if you think, hey, if Perkins, Tilly, Norvell are all going to contribute also, you know, there's only so many buckets to go around, and that would be my thing. What do you personally, I like the over. Terrence Mann's point prop was, I think, 12.5, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I like that, man.
Hold on.
I really quite like that. That was one that kind of jumped out to me immediately. I know that he could have games where he doesn't, but he's hit 18, 19, and 12 over his last three. Throughout the Virginia game, you know, he's been close, but recently I don't know. I feel comfortable taking the 12.5 on him and saying over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. I mean, the total's 147. Okay. So I also like Kevin Jelly's total points a little bit over 13.5. But the thing that scares
that one's closer
that is his minutes. I mean, I know he scored 23 points in 20 minutes or whatever the case is. I think he's going to have a tougher time doing that against Gonzaga.
Yeah, but he should see the minutes tomorrow because of the fact that Kumaji will have trouble. You know, Rui can shoot from, you know, jumpers, so he'll be if he I'm sure he'll be on Clark, but Clark can get out there and hit a jumper or two also. So athleticism wise, Cabangeli will probably play more minutes, just like when they played Virginia Tech and he had to guard Blackshear. Kumaji couldn't keep up, so that one's a little close. I would probably back off the Cabangeli prop, but I think Terrence Mann is one I'm going to bet tomorrow. All right, let's move on to the next game with your boy Carson Edwards, Purdue versus Tennessee. KenPom has it 75-74 in favor of Purdue. They're 267th in tempo ranking, Tennessee 171st. Right away for me, you know, we have to ask ourselves, if we're fading Brandon Clark for Rui, that's fine. But then are we going to go ahead and pay for, you know, Carson Edwards? Because I think the top two studs are Clark and they are Edwards, so you want to pick one of them. And if you can get away with taking Rui with Edwards, that would be fine. Now, we know Tennessee is pretty mediocre. It's kind of a recurring theme, Johnny, in the SEC. How many SEC teams do we talk about? They don't defend the three well. Well, Tennessee's another one that doesn't defend the three well. We saw against Iowa, your boy Rick Barnes blew a nearly, you know, almost blew it completely, a 25-point lead in the first half over Iowa. Iowa comes storming back to get it to OT. Your boy Admiral rotting on the bench for the end of the game and the overtime, and then it comes out that Admiral – said that he wanted them to keep Kyle Alexander in the game over him for whatever reason, I think because of the rim protection. So here's the thing. Tennessee can't defend the three, so this will play right into the hands of Carson Edwards, right? Because he is a big three-point shooter. So we can certainly play Carson Edwards and feel pretty darn good about it. Now, what are you going to be – I'm going to get into talking about the plays here, but while I'm loading my computer here, I want you to tell me, are you betting this game? Is there any value here in betting?
I absolutely love Purdue spread money line, and I'm going to explain why because I have before. And I'm going to even go give you a couple other things too. Carson Edwards isn't dead anymore. Thank God he is alive. I mean, it took me to see the 42-point – explosion against Villanova, but thank goodness, Walter. So here's how we do this. I absolutely love this prop bet, okay? And Rick Barnes went into a 100% stall, and I also had Iowa plus 8. So Rick Barnes went into a stall, Walter, up 25.
What's the Carson Edwards prop point bet? Isn't it 20? Is it more than 20, though?
It's 24.5. If Purdue is gonna win, doesn't he have to go nuts?
Absolutely. You know, him and your boy Harms, and like I said, the 3-point shooting against Tennessee is a big deal and a big thing. We saw what Bohannon for Iowa did.
And here's the thing: the other prop I like. I don't like the Grant Williams prop, because I like the Admiral prop more. And I don't know why Rick Barnes decided to sit him as much as he did. I don't care
what
Admiral says.
That was that. Admiral came on TV and said it.
I think Admiral was lying.
Might have been, yeah.
But the thing is here, Tennessee's soft. And I know Forsky likes them, and I've seen the icon pick on his Twitter of Williams. That team, even though I think they are talented and they're deep and we know all this, how can you justify going into a stall against Iowa and blowing a 25-point lead and going into overtime? And I'm going to point out Matt Painter is a better coach than Rick Barnes, and it's not even close.
Absolutely. Carson has been, you know, he's shooting 37% from beyond the arc this year, and it's just because his volume, and he went through that six-game stretch where he was shooting like 12%. But it's for three-point shooters, you know, for Iowa, Jordan Bohannon, who stands around a lot, he hit 3 of 7. Isaiah Moss, who has been a complete no-show for months after having a big games earlier in the year, put up 3 for 5 from beyond the arc, and Wieskamp hit 1. So, and Tennessee's been doing this all year. So Carson Edwards is a big guy. Ryan Klein, who I've written off. I know we don't like to do that in DFS, but I am just not a Ryan Klein guy. However,
well,
I can certainly see him doing some damage, okay? So Ryan Klein is going to shoot a lot of threes as the two guard. You could certainly use him as a 41% shooter. He makes sense as well.
He has a point prop. I refuse to do it. I like I said, the two player prop.
He's been it. Ryan Klein's been in smash spots before where he's just been a complete duck. So I mean, can't justify it either.
No, I mean the only player props I like are Edwards and the Admiral. I know the Edwards one's high, but here's the thing. When he went through whatever he went through, I think it's apparently he had a back injury that I was not aware of. Did you know he hurt his back?
Yes, we had talked about that. Well, I don't know if you were on the show when we did, but he's had some lower back issues on and off for a few weeks now, and getting treatments on those.
I think that's one of the primary reasons I have been
fading him. You know, that combined with the bad shooting, which obviously correlates.
Well, no. I'm all over Purdue tomorrow. It comes to a certain point, Walter, where you have to be very stubborn with these things. I can't justify back in Tennessee here.
Are you money-lining Purdue, or?
Well, Walter, the spread's 1.5. So, if they lose by 1, I'm just going to fucking lose. Give me the fucking plus. It's like plus 105. I'll fucking take it. I don't care. The way I feel is this. We have the best player on the floor in Carson Edwards. We have Rick Barnes on the other side who went into a stall against Iowa. Here's the problem. I don't think Rick Barnes is going to be up 25 points on Purdue. I don't think he has an answer to stop Carson Edwards. And, I mean, I am a tad bit concerned about Harms picking up, like, 3 fouls very quickly because, I've talked bad about Matt Harms. But it's more where, I mean, either Williams or Schofield are going to go off. I do... I do think that Hans' size will bother Williams. But I also think Schofield will do his thing tomorrow.
Yeah, and you're a big Admiral guy. So obviously Edwards good. Matt Harms, you know, you can't argue what he's been doing. Noel Eastern, you know, who had an ankle injury and only played 1 minute, or 10 minutes, I'm sorry, against Old Dominion, played 27 solid minutes against Villanova. That actually didn't show up with much, 4-5-4, but he played great defense, as he always usually does. The line climbs down there at 5-4. I just can't do it. Travion Williams not getting minutes. Grady Iford is an interesting play at 5K, just because he can shoot the rock. You know, he doesn't take a ton of shots, but he shoots fairly efficiently. And he's a very good rebounder. He's a averages 6 points, five rebounds. Usually gets around, you know, hovers between 16 and 20 fantasy points. So he's another guy where some of these games, you know, scoring tomorrow may not be that high, you know, high scoring because of these defensive backs. So a guy like you can look at. For Tennessee, I'm personally going right back to Lamonte Turner, who's 5'8". He's just, you know, anytime he's under 6K, you got to roll him out. He's right at 6K on FanDuel, so a little closer there. But, you know, Turner is just that guy that is going to shoot the basketball. He plays good defense, contributes some steals. You know, he gets after it on the glass. He's just, you know, a solid 23, you know, fantasy point per game average type of guy. He's had 32, 31, and 28 over his last three. So I'm going to continue to go there. I do like Jordan Bone, especially on DraftKings. His price has dipped to 6'8 from 7'2. That perks me up a little bit. I know he only had 22 fantasy points against Iowa last game, but he shot 12 times. His shot just wasn't falling. And he should get a lot more assists this time out. He averages 6 assists, and that's really, you know, his thing. And he's right at his season average at this price, 6'8". He averages right around 28 fantasy points on DK. So Jordan Bone and Lamonte Turner are my two favorite Tennessee plays. I probably won't be using too much Grant Williams at 9-4. I know he had 46 last game against Iowa, and he's a good play there, but I don't see him in this one getting more than roughly 31 to, you know, maybe at best 34 fantasy points, which is definitely solid, but you need more at that price. Give me Clark at that price instead. You know, and then Schofield's fine. You know, he had a really monster first half. He had like 24 at the half, or almost 30. And ended the game with 30. So Admiral just he worries me a little bit for DFS at these prices. So I'm as a tournament play, definitely like it.
Well,
so that's it for
also,
me. Bone and Turner majority, and then you know some harms with you know maybe a little Carson peppered in there.
Also in that game we do have an overtime situation because the spread is 1.5. I'm just like I said, I'm gonna ride Purdue. I just possibly back Rick Barnes after he blew a 25-point lead to Iowa and went into a stall and for God knows what reason kept Schofield on the bench.
Yeah, he was playing Bowden for some reason. I don't know. But yeah, we definitely could have overtime. That should be a good one. These first two games I definitely like from a fantasy standpoint, as opposed to these next ones. So Texas Tech versus Michigan. KenPom has it 62-61 for Michigan. So you have another close spread, right? 232nd in pace is Texas Tech, 316th for Michigan. This is just, you know, obviously, we're talking about studs, Carson Edwards, Grant Williams, Brandon Clark, Rui, these are all guys in decent spots. Jarrett Culver is 9-3, and he's as hot as anyone right now. You know, he's just producing at a crazy clip. 41, 56, 55, and 46 his last four games on DraftKings. He's just, you know, doing huge things. The only thing I worry about is that Michigan defense. Now Culver, you know, he's a lottery guy. You know, he's going to go in the lottery and definitely is a guy to look at here. But Coach Beilein, you know, could certainly take him out of this thing, and then Beard on the other side. I mean, it's tough for me to want to use anybody from this game. But Culver does, you know, he does take turns. I think he starts games at the three, with Tarik Owens playing the four and Odiase at the five. But Culver does play the four a lot, you know, kind of like a stretch four. And we know that Michigan struggles in the paint, so Culver could still do his thing, and then I think it's sneaky in GPP to run Tarik Owens or maybe even Norenz Odiase as a super punt just because those guys should get a ton of rebounds. But if I know Coach Beilein, you know, he's going to game plan for Culver, so guys like Mooney and Moretti are going to have to step up as well. Mm-hmm. So if you have the money and you want to stay with the hot hand and go Culver, I will not tell you to do otherwise. I've already got people in my Slack chat asking me about Culver, and you know, I love Culver. Culver is a beast. I'm certainly not going to tell you to completely fade him. I just, in cash games, the lower total makes me a little more nervous. But Owens and Odiase, those are the two sneak plays, I think. I don't love Owens' price at 6K or on DraftKings, but certainly look at him. I think the Michigan guards are good enough on defense to ignore Moretti and probably Mooney at his price of 6-2, but those guys are going to have to step up. For Michigan, you know, what we saw against Texas Tech when they did a hell of a job. You know, I thought Buffalo was going to have a chance to win that game, but it was not even close. They did a fantastic job of shutting down Jeremy Harris, a fantastic job of shutting down Massenburg. The only player that did well against them was Nick Perkins, who almost had a double-double. So what we want to look at, guys, John Teske here and Ignas Brazdeikis. Both guys can hit threes. Both guys have a decent mid-range jumper, and they can also bang in the paint. So those are the two guys that I'm looking at mostly for Michigan. Xavier Simpson is somebody, you know, that has a safe floor and you can look at, but his price is up to 7-3 now, and I don't particularly like paying that, you know, higher price for him, even though I do think he is pretty immune, knock on wood, to having a disastrous floor game. Jordan Poole and Charles Matthews and Isaiah Livers, I'm probably not on those guys. I like Poole and I like Livers and Matthews, but they're mostly, you know, scoring dependent and shoot jumpers and threes and things of that nature. So, what are you doing for this game, man? What's the bet? What's the bet on it?
The spread's two. I'm betting Michigan. Now, here's the thing where I'm at here. I will say Matthews has been taking it to the rack more, which kind of ups his fantasy value a little bit. I actually like the way he's been playing lately. I have to admit that. Here's the thing. If I had to play a Michigan guy, and the spread's 126, Walter. So, I mean, we have potential for overtime, which can kind of up the value in this game. But I love Brazdeikis tomorrow because in order for Michigan to do what I think they're going to do tomorrow, he's going to have to hit threes. And he's going to have to bang down low with Owens and Odasi. He's going to have to get to the free throw line. Because if he is able to get these guys in foul trouble on Witeski, then Michigan's going to win pretty easily. Because, look, I love Jared Culliver. I do. You know he's been my guy. I told you I thought Texas Tech was the best team in the Big 12 because of the way they play defense. But here's the problem with all this. They're playing a team that plays better defense than they do. So that's why I think Michigan wins. I think that Brazdeikis hits a couple key shots late, and I do think this is going to be a close basketball game. I think there is potential for overtime, but I think Michigan wins by 3 or 4.
Okay. So that's fine. Who's your favorite player from the game then?
Brazdeikis.
Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Teske's price is 6-9 on FanDuel as opposed to 6-2 on DraftKings. So a little tougher on FanDuel. I would prefer Brazdeikis on FanDuel and Teske on DraftKings. That's how I would work it there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't. Like I said, Teske's a good play. I'm not expecting Teske to hit threes. That was what I'm saying. I'm expecting Brazdeikis to do what he needs to do. So, especially if I'm not mistaken, didn't he have a really crappy game against Florida in his last outing?
You talking about Brazdeikis, you said?
Yep.
Yeah, he had, just 5-3 to 10 fantasy points in 23 minutes of action.
So
but they smashed him at the end too, so they didn't get as many minutes. So this would be a nice bounce back spot. For sure. And Teske's just turning out, you know, 20 to 25 fantasy points. Matthews, I know a lot of people are going to be like, Matthews is, you know, he's pretty cheap, 5-5 on DraftKings, and his last two tournament, you know, two games here in the tournament, 27 and 37, and he's looking good. I don't know, man. The price is right, for sure. I have trust issues, and this game is such a lower total that I don't want to go head first and stack it.
No, kids. I mean, look, you know he's my guy and he's been playing good. It's just the problem is he's going to have to hit jump shots. Because He's been taking it to the rack lately, but he's been doing that against Michigan and Florida. He's facing a team with a much better defense. So that's why I can't back Matthews here. But yeah, I like Brad Zekas. I think he's the only guy I would roll out here. So
got it. So yeah, Brad Zekas, I'm on board with you there, and then I like Teske on DraftKings. Xavier Simpson, if you're in the Survivor and you just want somebody who's in that price point that's safe, you can take them. But Norvell is there, and then also guys like Hunter and Ty Jerome are there, which we're going to get to that game right now. Ken Pom has Virginia beating Oregon 64-54. This is another, you know, this is the slowest game on the slate. Virginia 353rd in tempo ranking, Oregon 328. One thing about Virginia, we've harped on it for a while, you know, since Razzle pointed it out back against South Carolina, post players can do well against Virginia. I'm not going to be using a guy like Paul White, who does a lot of his work, you know, in the mid-range, or even Lewis King. I'm going to look mostly at Kenny Wooten. He's priced at 5'3 now on DraftKings. He's had 22, 26, and 36 over his last three. He had a very good game against Irvine, 7 blocks. He's actually had, four straight games of 4 blocks or higher. He's just a fan. He's, you know, he's living up to his tremendous upside. And he reminds me a lot of Jordan Bell from a few years ago. You know, I know Jordan Bell was doing his things on the Warriors for a little bit, but Jordan Bell from Oregon, he really looks a lot like how Kenny Wooten looks a lot like him right now, the way he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Wooten has a 13% block rate. He's crazy, shooting about 60%, you know, on his 2-point. He doesn't shoot threes, but he gets a lot of putbacks and bunnies and things of that nature. His rebounding rate has gone up. He's seen a slight increase there. He's right around 25% combined rebounding rate, and he's just, you know, being relied upon a lot. He's got a nice 6'9", 235 frame. I think he's going to give Virginia a little bit of issues, but Virginia, we haven't even seen really the Virginia that we saw rolling through conference season, and that's a little worrisome. I don't know if they should be shaking off the stress now. They made it past the first weekend. They're into the Sweet 16. Their fan base expects them, you know, to make that next step. But they just, their guard, they haven't, their guard play has not been there. Kyle Guy, he's I'm over it now, but he cost me Mania, shooting 2-for-15 and 0-for-10 from long range. He hits a season average of, 35-40%, and I'm advancing. But the guy shot 13% against Oklahoma,
yep.
And before that, he shot 25%. So he's in a rut. They're going to need Kyle Guy to get out of that. They're going to need DeAndre Hunter to play better. His first game against Gardner-Webb, he played really well, almost at 40, but just, 10-3 last game against Oklahoma, just didn't look that great. Ty Jerome looks pretty pedestrian to me. I know his numbers have been right around where they normally are, 26, 30, 20, and 30. But the assist numbers aren't like there as they were in the end of the conference season where he was putting up close to double digits in assists. And that goes directly into Kyle Guy and DeAndre Hunter not shooting the ball very well. So those guys really are going to have to, Oregon, the only team hotter than Oregon right now is Auburn, who was on the Friday slate. But Oregon's very, very hot right now. Altman's, of course, a fantastic coach. So he's going to need these guards. If Oregon's going to lose to Virginia and Virginia hopes to win, they're going to get guard play. And it's going to have to come from Kyle Guy and Hunter hitting shots. Now, Mamamdi Diakite is 4'6", Diakite. Oregon's a tough interior defense, so it might be more, I don't know that we can expect Diakite to put up 27 and 32 like he has over the last two games. But he's so cheap, you got to just roll him out because they're going to need his production. They're going to need his minutes. Obviously, Jack Salt is pretty much a stiff. Jay Huff is not a stiff, but I just don't know that he's, he doesn't have the trust yet to get any heavy minutes. But he isn't a liability when he's on the floor, and he really does deserve more minutes, especially over a guy like Jack Salt. Jack Salt's just out there to use his fouls and get guys, he's going to try to bother Kenny Wooten until he gets those two early fouls like ordinarily happens. So this is going to be a game that I'm not diving headfirst into. I do think Ty Jerome is fine for Survivor. I prefer Jerome over Simpson in that regard. And then I'm gonna roll out Diakite just because he's cheap and I think everybody's gonna have him. But Guy and Hunter, you know, this is an ideal GPP spot for them because I think a lot of people will be off. I mean, I'm certainly not gonna use Guy after what he did, except for maybe a deep GPP play. And then on Oregon side of things, Kenny Wooten. I don't like Paul White here, and I you know, Lewis King, for the same reason you would like Wooten, should do well, but I just, King to me, he's got a long ways to go still. He's a good player. He's rounding himself into one of the greats next year, I think, but I just don't think I can use him here. Now, what do you think about Peyton Pritchard, Johnny? Because he's been absolutely insane. 36, 38, 46, 34, and 34. Before that, he had a game of just 19, but then 33, 31, 33, and 33. So pretty much since the end of February, there's only been one game where he didn't hit 30-plus fantasy points. The dude's insane. What do you make of this crazy, you know, turnaround for him? He was just a very pedestrian player most of the season, and all of a sudden he's a superstar.
Well, here's the thing. Virginia has struggled against big men this year. So I kind of like King and Wooden, but the thing that no one's talking about, Walter, is when Oregon went on this 10-game winning streak, it's because they stuck your guy Amin in the starting lineup. It seems like he's kind of the straw that has made this team relevant. I mean,
but why do you think that Pritchard has turned it around? Like what do you think that's gotten into Pritchard? Because the dude's putting up crazy numbers.
Well, he's your best. Well, I'll take it back. Bol Bol was the best player until he broke his foot, and Dana Altman somehow lit a fire under Pritchard because he looked like shit. You know, I'll say it straight up. He looked like shit when they were struggling. I don't know what clicked, other than the fact that Mean came into the starting lineup and then they started really playing good. But, I mean, the difference to that team's a Mean, but then all of a sudden, well, what it is, Pritchard's three started falling. The first part of the year, because supposedly he's a good three-point shooter, he wasn't hitting the threes like he normally was. Now he is. And then it helps he shoots 85% from the free throw line. Dan Altman is a great basketball coach. This is what I'm going to say about this game. I'm expecting Virginia to win. I'm leaning Oregon with the points. Because I don't know what, if Hunter and Braxton Key and our guy Jack Salt are going to stop Amin, Wooten, or King from getting in the paint on him.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting game. And that's, like we said, the spot to target against Virginia. I'm just wondering, you know, if Pritchard can keep this up, he's really the X factor here, right? Because he's just killing it. Every time I think he's going to slow back down, he doesn't.
I mean, in order for them to win, he's going to have to keep doing what he's doing. Because if he has an off game, even though I think the bigs are going to have good games, I'm expecting Jerome and Hunter to do enough there to win. But if he has a good game like he's been having, I mean, I'm not going to moneyline Oregon, okay? I just want to reiterate that fact. I think the points I'm considering, and I'll let you know more while I sleep on it, but I worry about Virginia's interior. That's, I mean, unless obviously you can't handicap it, if King and Wooden get two fouls each, then that obviously changes the whole dynamic. But the thing that bothers me about this whole situation is this. If I'm not mistaken, and our guy Doolittle have a monster, had a good game against Virginia's interior?
Well, most, I mean, like we said, a lot, they have given up some good games to interior players. Doolittle, I mean, he wasn't terrible. It wasn't a monster line by any means, but big men have gotten on them. He actually kind of he started out fast, but then he struggled. He missed a lot of his shots. He had 8-5 and a block and a steal with 2 assists. So he didn't really do a whole hell of a lot against them. But you know, Manick had 13-5. It just Oklahoma. Okay, you know, the defense on the Virginia side of things actually did its job. So it's not a situation where we want to go targeting a bunch of guys. And I liken Doolittle closer to a Lewis King instead of a Kenny Wooten. So that's why I think Lewis King and Paul White will struggle, where I think Wooten will really muscle up on Virginia, and they're going to have issues guarding him because of where he does his work at. Still hear me okay?
Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
Oh, are you? Am I cutting out or what?
No.
Okay. I was just saying. So Doolittle didn't have a great game. No, he had 8-5-2. They didn't really. They you know, Manick had 13-5. It's been the players who really bang down low a guy like Kenny Wooten. I think Doolittle is similar to Lewis King and Paul White in that regard, because he does a lot of jump shooting and things of that nature. So I think Wooten's the guy we want to target here.
Yep. I mean, I love the interior as well, Trajan. And again, I'm not going to moneyline Oregon. I'm not telling you to do that. Would it stun me? No. But would I advise saying, hey, Walter, moneyline Purdue, moneyline Oregon, call it a day? Purdue, I'm just doing it because I just don't care. And I've seen enough with Tennessee and their coach. But that game, I definitely would lean points there just because I think.
Well, what's the line on Virginia anyways?
Walter, it's pretty good. Like, I think there's value in the points. I really do.
So Oregon with the points?
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. Thank God for Wi-Fi, Walter. Yeah.
Plus,
Walter.
I think it's +8.5.
Oregon's +330 on the money line. +8.5. But here's the kicker. The total's 119. So
yeah.
Oregon could lose this game 54-50. Yeah, because, and you'll never see me really bet over and unders, Walter, just because I don't have a crystal ball here, but 8.5, I mean, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you think Virginia is going to basically beat 9 or 10?
No.
And that's the thing. I actually think Oregon +8.5 has a little bit of value. Again, I'm just going to say, I'm not saying this is my top play for the games on Thursday. What I'm saying is, that if things are going good for me after the Purdue game and after the Michigan game, and I'm 2-0 going into that game, I'm taking the points and see where I'm at when the game's over.
Makes sense. All right. So that kind of wraps up. You know, it's just a little 4-game slate. So what are you seeing for? Well, we'll get to the betting here, but give me your lock play, you know, of the day. We'll start with that. What player that you like the best?
All right.
Is it Rui?
I think Rui's going to have a nice game. He's not my player, though. I'm going to tell you who my player is, okay? It's going to be your guy, Terrence Mann. I really just think, I mean, I like the way he's been playing. And in order for Florida State to win, which, again, I don't think they are, but in order for Florida State to win, Mann's going to have to do what he does.
All right, so Terrence Mann, Johnny's lock of the day. Get him in your lineup. Now, let's talk betting, because this is, you know, it's going to be really, a few more states besides New Jersey are going to have, legalization of sports betting. You're going to see the DK and FanDuel sports books open up a little bit here. Player props have seemed pretty soft there to me. So what are you doing here for your betting locks? It sounds like there's a few games, most of the games on here seem kind of scary to even touch because they could go either way. But I know you said you're going Purdue money line. You're taking Purdue in the points, right?
No. Walter, whenever you see a team that's a 1.5-point dog, you just throw that out and take the money line, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
What are really the odds that Tennessee wins by one tomorrow?
I don't know. It could happen, huh? Especially if it's going to go OT, it's going to come down to a free throw shooting contest, right?
Well, if it does, Purdue shoots free throws pretty good. I mean, and the thing is, I'm throwing it with the 1.5 because, Walter, it just doesn't matter. To me, it's this. If Tennessee could blow pretty much a 25-point lead and go into overtime with Iowa, and Carson Edwards apparently his back isn't hurt no more,
big time Purdue. Okay, so what are you going to be doing with that though? Is that a straight bet for you, or do you want to? This would be a nice new segment. Is there a parlay tomorrow cooking that you feel maybe we can take advantage of, or you want to throw it out to the listeners so they can, play it also?
No. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you how we're playing this tomorrow, and you're going to look at it, and I'll tell the listeners as well. But for you, good sir, it's going to be a value special.
All right. I like to hear it.
There you go.
So Purdue, so betting lock wise, Purdue though, is that right? Is that what we're giving people?
Yeah. Yep.
Purdue money line.
And
all right.
And my two teamer for tomorrow, Walter, is Purdue plus the 105, because I'm an odds guy. If it lands on one tomorrow, and they lose by one, then I'm just gonna lose. But I'm not backing Rick Barnes in a Sweet 16 game. When I watched Tennessee at Walter, they didn't just struggle against Iowa. They got up 25, went into a stall, and went into overtime with Iowa. And I'm not even talking bad about Iowa's team. They were decent this year. But let's go to the first game. They were losing to Colgate with 9.5 minutes left. Okay, so you tell me, is Tennessee's form coming into this game good?
No, they're playing, instead of playing to win, it kind of seems to me like they're playing not to lose, being a little too careful.
Yeah, and then, Walker, let's now look at Purdue. Purdue beat a decent old Dominion team by 12 or 13 points. And then beat the brakes off a wonderfully coached Jay Wright team.
That was insane. I mean, Edwards was super hot, too. Was wild.
No. And I get that. And, again, I'm not taking anything away from the fact that the guy was unconscious, even though he is my guy and he's not, looks like he's healthy. What I'm saying is this. If Purdue, both games they've won by double digits, if they're capable of beating Villanova by almost 30, they're very well coached. Okay, and I'm reiterating that point that they are very well coached. They're not going to have some kind of game plan to, I mean, They're not going to stop Grant Williams or Admiral. It's going to be one of the two that go off. But they're not going to have the game plan to stop the other guys like Bolden or Baldwin and our guy Alexander and Bone and the guy we like to use on DFS because of the salary. I have to believe Matt Painter is going to have a better game plan than Rick Barnes.
Oh, yeah. If it comes down to a late-game situation where it's close and it's whichever coach, you know, makes an error first, I definitely think that Painter can out-coach Rick Barnes. Certainly.
And the other game we're going to ride with tomorrow, Walker, and again, I'm not touching the Gonzaga game just because there's too many variables. And again, I believe Gonzaga wins. Can Florida State cover that number? Yes. But that's the game. Like I said, the dude's dad died. He hasn't been with the team. I mean, yeah, they're going to be emotionally charged up to win for the guy, but that Gonzaga team is not a joke. And I know that, you know that, and you can't, Walter, when we get to this part of the year, because the games are tough, all of them are tough, you're not going to bet all four games in one day. You just got to take a pass on one or two of them. Now, if the thing is, if we're good on Purdue and Michigan, then I will be on Oregon with the points. So I do.
Oregon with the points? Okay, gotcha.
If Purdue and Michigan are cast already, because at that point, then you're playing with house money. But I'm not.
Well, the Michigan game starts only 20 minutes before Oregon, so you would have to live bet it then, or commit after Purdue, I guess.
No, and Walter, that's the thing. You will have the option to live bet it as well. So I'm just saying that my top two plays, someone. Of Purdue to win and Michigan to win. It's only because of this. I love Chris Beard. I love that Texas Tech team. But the problem is they're looking at a mirror image of themselves, except that mirror image plays better defense than they do. But that mirror image has a big who can shoot threes.
Yeah, that game, man, it's going to be a really tough one to use for fantasy purposes because Texas Tech, number one defense. Guess what? Michigan, number two defense. Look out.
Well,
you got the one versus two. And then you got two teams that you know, Michigan shoots a three decently, but Texas Tech shoots a three decently also, and they're both top 20 defensive three-point range. So is this going to be a first to 55 wins, or what do we do? What do we think?
I mean, Walter, the total is 126. So that, I think the first 1-60 is winning the basketball game. I mean, again, that I'm telling you right now, it's going to be decided by 3 or 4 points. How we are doing it, though, I mean, you don't need to lay the number with Michigan because of this. They're already 6 value money line. They're like, what, minus 135? Because you're taking the plus 105 on Purdue, both of those are going to pay whether you lay the number with Michigan or not. I mean, again, my whole thing is because of the value we're already going to have with Purdue, you just say Michigan to win and hope they do. Again, that's the way I'm playing it tomorrow. I'm just going to skip Florida State. And like I said, if I see a spot with Oregon on a live bet, I'll be all over it just like I was on Lipscomb night. Same deal for me and Walter. On the Lipscomb game, I missed plus 180 by a second. I mean, I wound up getting them like a minus like 115, 110, or whatever they gave me when I did it. So, yeah, by a split second, I missed plus 180, but it's fine. They both those bets won, so all's good. But, yeah, no, but, yeah, for the player props, I definitely like the really one a little bit, but I will. I would advise a Carson Edwards prop for one simple reason.
On Carson Edwards.
If he's healthy, is Tennessee stopping him? I mean, that's really what it is. Because if he's hitting threes, which we know he obviously can, and Tennessee can't really stop the three, you see how that could be a problem, right?
Yep. I definitely do. Tennessee's got the chops to keep up with them. It's just a matter of who's Noel Eastern going to be guarding. We know Carson can defend a little bit. Klein, you know, whoever Klein's guarding, I think, is who I probably want the most for Tennessee. But that player prop on Carson, I think, is really close because you're right. If they're going to win, he's going to have to score 30 points. I wish it was like 21 because I'd be all over it.
No.
But the 24 is really close.
Well, the thing is for me, Walter, I'm going to have to sleep on it. Like, I'm not slam dunk doing it because of this. There are two prop bets with that same number. One is him. The other one is Zion. And do you
yeah,
know
and
the,
you
got to
feel more confident than I am.
Well, how in the world are they planning on stopping him? If a guy who's 7'6" couldn't. Blackshear may die on Friday night. And I know you like him, Walter. It's the wrong
I definitely like him.
Guy.
I probably wouldn't use him. But I mean, Blackshear did well against them. He had, 23-10 last time, if memory serves correct.
Yeah,
I know that
yeah,
Zion wasn't playing in that last game.
What I'm saying is,
but
I
also
know you
J-Rob's
love
both. Back. How much does J-Rob being back affect the thing, do you think?
Well, I think Duke wins money line because I know the way this shit works, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Duke is still plus 240 to win the whole thing. They're still favored, and I kind of wish they would have lost just because that would really improve my Kentucky prop bet, but I'm very grateful Washington apparently is back. But here's the thing, Walter. Whenever a team has a scare like that, and I will say Central Florida should have won. I mean, they were the better team that night. Unfortunately, they up four. They tried the stupidest thing you could possibly do on an alley-oop, and then your boy Reddish hit the biggest three of his life. And everyone's talking about the charge that should have been called and the over-the-back on Barrett. Here's the bottom line. You're up four with the ball with under a minute left. Instead of pulling it out, you played street ball, and you got 1,000% burned. Because, Walter, as soon as they hit that three, and I told my dad, I was like, look, they're going to win. Somehow, some way, they're going to find a way to win. And then Zion did what he did. And, Walter, here's the irony here. A putback happens as soon as Taco fouls out. I mean, that's irony. But, and like I said, I don't want to hear about it should have been a charge, it should have been over the back. Don't try an alley-oop up four with 45 seconds left and then allow a three on the other end.
And that's just it. You know, I agree with you there. Blaming that on the officiating is kind of, you know, it's a poor call, but they should have been in position. There's been other games this year where the officiating was clearly worse. Like that North Carolina – I point immediately to the North Carolina State-Clemson game in the ACC tournament.
Yep.
That was the worst officiated game of the year. So that one cost Clemson the game. But this where UCF should have, you know, been smarter with it, you know, I totally agree. A couple calls at the end, but – what? Plenty more. I think more fouls were called on Duke there. They got to the foul line more.
No.
So
correct.
It's what it is.
And the thing,
part of the game.
And the thing is, yeah, no, and people want to say Duke always gets calls and stuff. You could say that, but at the end of the day, You're up four with the ball with 45 seconds left. Instead of pulling it out to take more time and potentially getting a better shot than what you tried to do, it bit you in the ass.
Or milk the clock on that possession, right? Get the clock down.
Yeah. No, and the thing here's what scares me for Virginia Tech. And you can look at the game log, the stats and his DraftKings stats and his points probably look great. To me, RJ Barrett played horribly in the last game, and his stats don't reflect it. I would be very concerned that he goes absolutely nuts against Virginia Tech. Because you could pull up the stats, Walter, they look good, but he looked like crap to me against Central Florida. And the stats look good.
Yeah, I mean, he only had 16. I mean, he had 16 and 8 and 4, which is good, but not really good enough for him, you know? And that's where I would question,
no.
if you think he's going to score a lot, does that affect that Zion player prop?
Well,
or are they both going to get theirs?
Well, the problem is, see, both of those player props are high. One of them is going to get there. I would vote Zion because I think he's 100% unstoppable. But the problem is, I'm not expecting Barrett to have another bad game.
Yeah. That one's tough,
so,
man. Those are very tough.
So the Duke player props are hard. I mean, because, Walter, here's how I would tell you this, and I'll look more into it as well. One guy's going over, one guy's going under. And the thing is, I know Barrett went absolutely fucking insane against Virginia Tech in the one meeting. But Zion
without
didn't
Zion.
Play.
Yep.
Correct. So you see kind of the catch-22 here? I mean, Zion had 32 against the guy with 7-6. I mean, that's why I'm like, I'm looking at Zion, and I'm not seeing him picking up two quick fouls either. Like I said, if you could handicap that, then me and you are putting every dime we have on Barrett to go over 23.5. But if I had to do it right now, I'd be on the Zion prop bet just because I don't. If he's going to play 38 or 39 minutes or whatever the hell he did in the last game, I guarantee you he's scoring 24 or more. I mean, he doesn't make free throws. That's something he needs to work on. But
yeah, and Virginia Tech Ty Outlaw story out that he got charged with marijuana possession, and as of now,
yep.
I think he's going to play, but that might kind of mess things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I will not lay the number with Duke because I don't do that, and you obviously saw the way it worked out tonight why I don't. But I could pretty much tell you with great confidence Duke's not losing to them. There's no way they're going to play that bad again.
What about, we're going to talk more tomorrow about the actual slate for Friday, but obviously you like Duke money line. What are you doing with the LSU-Michigan State game? That one seems like it might be tough.
It is because of this. It's going to come down to two things. It's going to come down to one matchup, Walter, but it's actually what it should really come down to. Our guy Winston versus our guy Tremont Waters. This is pretty much how I'm breaking this down for you, Walter, even though I think the line's a bit inflated. It comes down to who you think's having the better game. To me, I think it will be Winston. I think defensively he will make it tough on Waters. And now
minus 6 Michigan State. Do you think that's too much?
Yeah, I think it's a bit inflated. I do. I mean, I'll break that down more. But here's the thing I'm looking at, and this is why. That's a player matchup I'm looking at, the guards, Winston versus Waters. But then, do you know the other thing I'm looking at? Tony Bedford versus Tom Izzo. Look, I respect the job Bedford's done in Will Wade's absence. Respect it. They're talented, all right? But now we're here, we're dealing with the problems. You don't think Tom Izzo is going to have those guys ready to play with 4 or 5 days to prepare? And that's the thing. I also am curious to see what Bigsby Williams does against Michigan State's guys inside, Ward, Goings, your guy Tillman, who you really like. I think Michigan State does win. I'm not sure if they cover or not yet, though. Like I said, I'm gonna look harder into Friday, tomorrow. But when I think of the two coaches, there's no way you could back LSU in that situation. But I think the key matchup is Winston versus Waters, though. I mean, if Winston goes off for 25, 26, 27, 28, then LSU is going to have a very massive problem on their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Tremont and Waters plays lockdown D, so it is a key matchup. I also like the in this Auburn North Carolina game. Right now, I'm looking
Well,
at the site and it shows North Carolina -5. You might
yeah.
have to talk me out of Auburn. You might have to talk me out of Auburn in the points, man,
I
'cause
mean,
I feel strongly about Auburn.
well, here's the thing that scares me. This is the only thing, Walter. Auburn hit threes like that against North Carolina because they were just drilling them against Kansas. I don't know if you have the stats of how Carolina defends the three or not. I'm sure you could pull that up because I think that's very important.
The pace definitely favors Auburn because they're going to be chucking. North Carolina is a top 100 defense against the three, but the pace
Okay.
favors Auburn a
Well,
lot. And these are two teams that are top 10 offenses.
Walter, the NBA total, the total is 163.5 right now. So there's going to
Yeah.
be a shitload of points scored. I don't hate Auburn with the points. If you want to take a stab at the money line, it's ballsy, but you could very easily money line Auburn and money line Duke, and you will get plus on the parlay. I need to look into that too. Like I said, I'll look into Friday, starting tomorrow. But I don't hate Auburn. I just, again, I don't know if they can shoot threes like that. Again, if they can, then yeah, you're damn right they can win. I guess it is. As long the only matchup that scares me is not even May Cameron Johnson and White. I saw Nasir Little. He could get O'Keeke in all kinds of foul trouble. That would be my one pressing concern. Because your guy, your the Huskies met Nasir Little. That, I mean. He definitely showed me his skill set. I definitely see why everyone says he's a lottery pick.
Yep, it'll just be a matter of how many minutes he plays, but here's the thing with Auburn, you know, they've got pretty much every person on the floor can shoot the three. You know, Harper, O'Keeke, Brown, and you got Doughty and Dunbar gonna chuck it. Anfernee McLemore, who's 6'7", 220, he shoots the three. McCormick is that instant offense type of player off the bench. He can shoot three. You know, they've got seven or eight guys who can shoot it, and that's going to be what keeps them in the game. And they have no problem running up and down. Bruce Pearl was actually on TV, what, on Scott Van Pelt's show like 2 nights ago, talking about we're not going to change a thing. And he said bettors take the over. It was kind of funny. He said bettors take the over because they're going to run and gun. They're
Yeah,
not going to
no.
slow the game down.
No, because Walter, if they try and play a half court game, they will lose by 20.
Yeah,
So,
I agree, man. I agree. Auburn has to continue to do what they do, and that's run and gun and take the three, and they're one of the best teams in the country at it. If Nazir Little is going to get, you know, the 20 minutes and you know, maybe this was his coming out party, because we've been talking about Nazir Little all year. We've used him all year. You know, it's taken people a while to get to him, and we know his talent. Maybe that was the game he needed to really kind of, you know, take over, because, you know, Cam Johnson's nice, Luke May's nice, but Nazir Little is a game changer. Those guys have nice, solid floors, you know, veteran leadership. But Little is definitely an X factor. But I like Auburn in the plus five. I'm maybe I'll regret that, but all the spots where I felt like that, in the tournament so far, I've been right on. So I feel like that's the play.
I mean, I don't like it, man. I don't hate it. I mean, there comes a certain point where you have to go with your gut. And again, I need to look into it more, but I don't hate the play. I mean, I lean Auburn with the points, so you can take that for what
it's
worth. I'll really.
That's what I'm saying. I'm on Auburn plus five. I don't know that they win the game, but I don't think they're going to lose by more than that. I think it would be a 2 or 3 point game max.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know for sure on Friday it will be on Duke money line. It's just a matter of what else I bring with them. So it might be Auburn plus five. So, I mean, and like I said, in terms of a player prop, I'm still going to look into that. And again, you have them all, so that's a good thing. And I'll figure that out. But yeah, the two-team partner, Martin Walker, and you saw what it paid. Michigan money line, Purdue money line, and you have two games with thick ass little lines, but you know what? Win or go home. And like I said, if we find a spot on a live bet with Oregon, you'll know.
Let's go. All right. So we will be back tomorrow night to talk Friday slate and recap Thursday. We will be joined by Mr. Uncle Dunkle. So we're gonna try to go on a little bit earlier so more people can listen live instead of just on demand, and we'll take all your questions live, all right? So good luck tomorrow, Johnny. I'll be talking to you, obviously, here in a minute. I'm going to be looking at the player props tonight
yep.
as well. So I'll be
yep.
sending you what I want to do.
Perfect. And like I said, let me know about the show tomorrow, and let me know so me and Dunkle could be on together. And like I said, GS, you like that idea.
Yes, sir. It's going to be a big one. All right. Take care, buddy. Cool. So, yep, there you have it. We covered a lot more of the betting side of things today, just because I think, you know, as the slates for DFS get smaller and you know, it becomes, you know, more 1v1, 2v2, maybe you want to, you know, do some of these player props and bet on some of these games and get action, you know, a little bit differently, because pretty soon we're going to be having two game slates again every slate. Now, in years past, they would combine NIT and CBI finals into some of the other slates to create, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4 game slate that way. So hopefully they will follow suit and do that yet again. The CBI final will be a best of three. So there's going to be, you know, lots of opportunities for them. They've missed out on playing some of these CIT, CBI games here, unfortunately, but hopefully they'll go back to doing that. Maybe it'll take some of us tweeting to DK Assist mentioning that. But appreciate everybody who listened live and on demand as you're building lineups. As you heard from Johnny, he's locking Terrence Mann. That was one of the guys at the beginning of the show I had mentioned liking a lot. And then he's on the Michigan money line and the Purdue money line. For me, you know, in addition to Mann, who I do like, and Cabin Kelly, I think – I know Hachimura may end up being popular because it's cheaper, but I really think that I want those Brandon Clark safe points. You know, he just is Flores uber safe. And the only thing that could derail him would be early foul trouble, which would be, you know, absolutely terrible. But Brandon Clark, I think, even more so than Jared Culver or even Carson Edwards, is somebody I feel the most comfortable with paying that particular price. And then in the mid-range, Lamonte Turner. I'm just going to keep locking him.
So appreciate everybody who listened. Take care. We'll be back tomorrow night. I'll have the exact time for you after I talk with Dunkle. Johnny will be on and probably a couple other special guests. So best of luck tomorrow in the Survivor and all the other GPPs. See you.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say they greedy, but they come back for more. Superstar status, baby, hold the applause. My life a movie, baby, you're in this episode. Dressed down in this bitch walls, taking rabbits home with me. Give a damn about it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. GA got that dope.